EMZT Radio is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audio download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/EMZT. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
In the box.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains in.
No. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Oh, no tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
You're staying. This isn't a democracy anymore.
This is now the United States of
EMZT Radio.
They mostly come at night. Mostly.
Welcome to another episode of EMZT Radio. I am Bane Hellborn, and the infamous MJ will be showing up later. Well, I can't let him do all the work all the time. It's not fair to him. So, here I am. I did some work for this podcast. I hope you enjoy what I found. It'll be interesting. So, depression. It's a horror movie in its own right. You just never know what each day will bring when you try to get up and face the world. I was offered medication, but I really hate chemical medication if it's not herbal. I feel that herbal's works a lot better with the body than the chemical. I just have to focus on things that interest me and have those motivate me. It's hard sometimes because I just don't want to get up at all. But if it gets too bad, I will take the medication so I can function. So I'm back to watching my mom. Not full time because my dad has been home. They haven't had a lot of work to do. So it's been nice, but I feel bad for my dad because, you know, he's there with her 24/7 on the days he's home, and it wears him down. I can see it, and I really want him to stay alive as long as he possibly can. So, yeah, depression. It can be a horror movie in its own right. It gives you terrible nightmares, and that's scary, too. So, I'm working on what I can do to keep motivated and to get my butt up every day. I've been a big fan of Pluto TV. They have a Horror 24/7 channel is what it's called. And that's been some really interesting stuff they put on. They're a big fan of the Poltergeist movies, at least the second and third one, which the third one is just so cheesy because the man playing Kane is not the same man. So they're putting this makeup on him and he doesn't look the same. And you can see where little Heather O'Rourke is pretty sick. That's the movie she died making. So you can see that she's sick. And it's really sad. Because at the end, they dedicate it to her. They played all three Cube movies lately. I like the Cube. I like sci-fi, too. Sci-fi, horror, it goes together. Because sci-fi is another unknown element when you're out in space. Or inside a cube prison with all sorts of traps that you don't know what kind of traps they are. And on the second cube, everything was time related. There was time sped up in one room, time slowed down in another room. There was alternate realities where people saw themselves. That was scary. And then the third one is an origin story on how the cube was first created and why they put people in it and how. So that was really good. You should check those out. Local channels, we have a channel called Comet TV. They're playing some classic movies. So the other day when I was watching my mom, we watched a really stupid 80s movie called Vampire on Bikini Beach. oh my god. How did the movie like that ever get made? Because it was a total stupid surfer type movie with a narration from a bikini babe fighting vampires from taking over the world. It's just, oh my god. 1987. I don't know how that ever got made, but it was made and it was stupid. And then they had a classic 1971 Vincent Price, Abominable Dr. Fibes, where he takes revenge on the people who killed his wife in a car accident, all the way from like the police who were investigating the case to the doctors in the hospital who couldn't keep her alive. And he ended up, as it called him, a living corpse, because his real face was mostly skeletal because the car accident burned him. So he had a mask on, but it was Vincent Price's face. But he wasn't speaking because his mouth wouldn't move, I guess. But you could hear him. I guess it was pre-recorded audio that Vincent Price did for the character that they played at certain parts of the movie. So it's a really good... Vincent Price is always a great classic horror films you can watch. And they are pretty scary, too. At least at the time, they were. And I'm currently watching Season 7 of The Walking Dead on Netflix. And I'm really hating Negan. Jeffrey Dean Morgan did such a good job with Negan. He just is such a hateful fucking character. But he has shown somewhat of a soft side sometimes. So he's not all bad, but he's still one fucking bastard. I just... ugh! I can see where this was hard, because viewers dropped off Season 7 because Negan had Rick so fucked up that Rick didn't want to try anything to piss him off. Because Negan kills people at the drop of a hat. Like, in one episode, I believe it was episode 5, where he killed 2 people. Spencer, he gutted. Like, took a machete, shoved it into his guts, and slid it all the way open to where his guts fell out on the ground. Gutted that guy. And had one of his people kill Olivia, shot her in the face, because Olivia was too fat. So, I mean, even though he did offer to have sex with her, which she turned down, because he has this policy that he doesn't hurt women. So, I mean, it's not all bad, but the way he treats the women, his harem, they're all afraid of him because they never know what he's going to do. And, Season 7, Walking Dead, is hard. I can see where people just couldn't stomach it anymore. My sister couldn't finish watching after the first episode where he killed Glenn and Abraham. Spoiler alert, sorry. With his baseball bat. Oh, man, that was brutal. She actually went and threw up. I'm halfway through Season 7. I'm really hating Negan. I'm really wanting Rick to do what he does best, is think his way out and try to kick ass of the saviors who are just a bunch of evil fuckers. But it's just funny how Negan has absolutely fucked over every one of his people, but yet they won't rise up against him. He's just one man, but he's got everybody so... Negan is such one hateful bastard of a character. Just, I'm waiting for when the shit hits the fan and he gets killed. I'm looking forward to seeing that episode. I was hearing rumors that The Walking Dead might be coming to an end soon anyway, because people are bored with how it's been written. And, you know, they're just so upset by all the characters that do get killed. Even though, you know, you should know, Walking Dead, some of the most beloved characters are going to get killed anyway. That's just how it is. And I think the zombie apocalypse, that storyline, it never gets old. It just depends on who does it. But for The Walking Dead, it's getting pretty old. It's season 7. I mean, how much further can you take it? So that's what I do sometimes. And I've been mostly Skyrim game playing. Because what's more therapeutic than a video game where you can kill people and steal things and get away with it? Or not get away with it if your skills are not up. But the fun part was I got caught trying to steal from a guard. And so I opted to pay my fine, which was only 25 gold. And then after I got out, I realized, well, they said they would take any stolen goods they found. I didn't think they found any because I thought I got rid of it, but nope, they found some. So I went back into the jail and found the evidence chest that had my stuff in it that they took, and I stole it back. And I didn't get caught this time, so that was funny. I'm currently looking for work from home online jobs to bring in some money, if you're wondering. Yeah, I did quit my job because the bullying and the office politics are just too much. I'm sorry. I just wanted to do my work, and I was trying to do my work, but when the office bullying, even at management level, was just making everything difficult, I just had to quit. And I didn't have another job lined up, so... And it can hurt you mentally, because they make you doubt your skills, they make you doubt yourself, and that's hard to shake sometimes. Other than that, things are okay. I just am not working, and I'm back to helping watch my mom and watch Little Boom Doom so my sister can work. And I guess things are okay. Nothing really to complain about. And I've been finding some interesting things online to discuss with you and hopefully get you interested in things going on in the world, like new horror movies for the 2017. I found some novels that you should check out. And some other things that interested me. And I think I've rambled enough. Let's take a music break. And you are listening to EMZT Radio.
Go away, son.
And it's now time for an update from our crowdfunding friends. From Miss Emma Dark for Salient Minus 10, dated November 30th. 1 year on! Hello, backers. Today marks the one-year anniversary of wrapping the principal photography for the film. It's been an intense journey so far, and the festival run has only just begun. If you attended either the premiere at the British Horror Film Festival in Cineworld Leicester Square, or the second screening at Darkfest last Sunday, thank you very much for coming, and I hope you enjoyed the film. There's a great review of the film over at Dread Central, which is definitely worth a read. Here's an extract for you. Quote, instead of relying on gore or cheap jump scares to get under your skin, this is a film which asks you to think and connect the dots yourself, and you almost feel as though you want to thank it for that, end quote. There are some photos from the premiere up on Facebook fan page right now, if you would like to view them, and I'll be posting up some photos from Darkfest soon, too. We played on a gigantic screen at Darkfest to a large genre audience and received very positive feedback indeed, as well as having a brilliant premiere at the British Horror Film Festival in one of the UK's largest cinema chains and most prestigious venues. If you missed either screening or are waiting to attend a large screen festival screening near you, hopefully we will have more news soon. Until then, thank you once again for backing and have a lovely weekend. Emma. And I dropped the ball on this one. I didn't see the update for Dead Air, where they did another campaign to do finishing production costs on another Indiegogo.com. Posted December 1st. We are currently at 42% funded, which is amazing news. So close to 50%. Can you help us get there? Indiegogo has a trending page for films that are crowdfunding, and we've been up and down like a yo-yo today, reaching the dizzy heights of fifth place for some of the day. Please help us get to that number one slot by sharing the heck out of us from Indiegogo. Also, our awesome behind-the-scenes team have created another BTS clip for you all to enjoy. Only 5 ultra-rare limited edition Skrull DVDs left. Make sure you tell your fellow Daisy Ridley fans and point them this way. Keep sharing, keep backing, keep bringing on the love. Thank you, Jeff and Peter. Dead Air post-production finishing funds are at 46% of £9,000 flexible goal, which they're at £4,150. They have a couple days left. Please do give to this project to help it get it finished. It's a fun horror comedy that mixes gremlins and critters together with Twilight Zones, A Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, and Josie and the Pussycats. And EMZT Radio will have a sticker on a luggage in the film, so that's what we're looking forward to. Plus, we love horror. We like horror puppet comedy things. Gremlins and Critters, top 2 from our childhood. Just love those. This is going to be awesome. Alex Fernandez has another Kickstarter campaign for his new project, Aurora, Chronicles of a Hero, a new series that will start in 2018. He is the creator of Dawn and Body Jumpers. He's looking for $50,000 to start this project. He's up to $996, and he has only a week left to go. So do give to this project to help make it happen. The story is Lori Walker is a 22-year-old CEO of a family-owned multinational Los Angeles-based corporation. She appears in her daily work life to be your standard successful female business leader, but in fact she is hiding a deep secret. Lori was born different, very different. She has special powers. As a child, they were alien to her and frightened her. She ignored them, but as she grew, so did her powers until she was forced to confront them and eventually gain mastery and control. Now she finds herself poised to defend her birthplace, known to all as the City of Angels. Los Angeles has become the stage for evildoers, committing horrific crime and creating chaos. These criminals are hell-bent on destroying her city. Against Lori are gangs of criminals with their own inherent superpowers being used to harm the citizens of L.A. to gain power and prestige. Lori Walker has but one choice, to become a crusader for California, Aurora of the Angels. Soon we learn Lori will do battle with another powerful woman, a woman scorned by the city where she came to find her dreams. Carol DuPont is 40-something ex-starlet, conned at a young age by a producer named Jake Silver, who promised Carol he would make her famous if she would accept his offer. 20 years later, she is living on borrowed time in the underbelly of Tinseltown as a cheap B-horror star, doing roles she took to keep from starving. Jake, a washed-up drunk, has sold her hopes to the highest bidder years ago, another victim of the machine. But Carol, with her own super-powered alter ego Dollface, has a plan built on revenge. She will take her dignity back by destroying the very place that lied to her, cheated her, and stole it from her many years ago. She will get her revenge and doesn't care if she takes the city down with her. It is only Aurora that stands in her way. Two women, two dreams, two secrets. One epic battle set in L.A. against the backdrop of smoky sunsets where angels and devils mingle to decide fates and fortunes. Definitely help our friend Alex out. He is amazingly talented for any film project he puts his mind to, and you won't regret it. And this will be an epic project when it's done. And we'll put the link to the fundraiser in the show notes. And for her, posted by our friend Daniel Mark Young, November 16th, Perks Now Shipping. Hey guys, it's been a long journey, but we finally made it. Today marks the day that Perks start shipping. If you're in the UK, expect to see your goodies with you this coming week, and for all international orders, please allow 7 to 21 days, depending on customs. We have marked everything as gifts, so you shouldn't be required to pay any import taxes. We hope you enjoy the film and all the great perks we had to offer, and please keep an eye out for our next project coming very soon. Thank you for all your support, Dan. And yes, I did receive my copy of DVD and Blu-ray of For Her, and it's been autographed. And I also did get the poster, which it's going to be going up in my room in a nice frame. So I got that on Wednesday, so that means all the U.S. backers should be getting theirs really soon, if not have gotten it already. For Her will be available on Amazon Instant Video U.S. and U.K. starting December 25th. So do check it out. And that is the update of our crowdfunding friends. Please do stay tuned for more projects that will let you know as soon as we soon know. And as MJ always says, we are big supporters of independent horror projects of all types, from music to film to web series to books to anything horror-related, independent projects. We are big supporters. If we can't give to it, we will at least put it on our pages and Twitter and everywhere to let everyone know about it. And you are listening to EMZT Radio.
I'm Bob from Bungmouth Bobcat. You can listen to me live every Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern at sfdradio.com, where I'm bringing you the best of the worst in cheap booze, talking bum wine, beers, 40s, malt liquor, and more. Always featuring the latest and greatest in the world of drinking and entertainment, along with some special guests. So come on down and take a ride with Bum Wine Bob. If you can't be there live, you can always listen in the archives at bumwinebob.com. So sit back, relax, grab a drink, and enjoy. Cheers.
From 1428elm.com, want to be featured in the Fred Heads documentary? Here's how. Are you a lover of everything Freddy? I mean, you're here, so I would sure as hell hope so. Check out how you and your love for the Elm Street series can be featured in the upcoming Nightmare on Elm Street fandom documentary, Fred Heads. As you may or may not be aware, a documentary all about the wonderful fans of Freddy and the Nightmare series is coming our way courtesy of Venn Pictures. Fred Heads focuses on us fans rather than another behind-the-scenes Nightmare doc, which we've seen a few in the past 30 years. So it's definitely a breath of fresh air to see someone taking the initiative and drawing attention to the fandom of Freddy. After all, without the fans and our undying loyalty to the fedora, the Nightmare films wouldn't have risen to the iconic status that has etched their place in horror history. Now, would they? The coolest part about all this is that the creators behind this glorious project are calling for Fred Heads everywhere to tell their story of what Freddy and the films mean to you as a fan. The announcement is asking for those interested to create a 5 to 10 minute high-quality video of yourself. By following the handy-dandy guideline of what is needed in the video, you could earn yourself a shot in being in the documentary. And I will leave a link in the show notes so you can get the guidelines on what you need to do to make your video. Fred Heads is accepting video submissions now until January 2018, so gather up all your Nightmare memorabilia and get crackin', Elm Street dwellers. Follow Fred Heads on both Facebook and Twitter to keep with production progress. And if I have the time, I'm going to try to get in on that. I'm a total Freddy fan. And you are listening to EMZT Radio.
The show that puts the story back into history.
History is all about discovering the why. And I think that in that process, it's important to never take the story out of history.
Making history come alive, one episode at a time.
But this is a podcast on the American Revolution for this series and all about a free country, so do whatever the hell you want.
Visit themondayamerican.com to get more. Dive into the Monday American. Don't worry, we'll be gentle.
Another article from 1428elm.com. Stranger Things gets renewed by Netflix for season 3. Woo! Yeah! Things are going to get strange on Netflix for at least one more go-round. Streaming giant Netflix, home of the overly popular and rightfully so original series Stranger Things, has announced the renewal of the show for season 3. Though we all knew this was coming, the green light had not officially been given until December 1st. The news comes from courtesy of Variety. Immediately after the release of its first two things proved to be a big hit for Netflix. It is popular not only with the horror audience, but with the mainstream casual viewers as well. That's not only due to the excellent storytelling, but of course the awesome performances from its amazing ensemble cast, including Phil Wolfhard, Noah Schnapp, Caleb McLaughlin, Gayton Matarazzo, and of course Millie Bobby Brown as Eleven. Season 2 captured lightning in a bottle for a second time, gripping viewers from beginning to end with an amazing follow-up season. Most fans binged through the show immediately, already wanting more of it by the time it was quickly over. The good news is that a Season 3 is coming, but of course we're going to have to wait a little while for it. There is not a set release date of the third season of Stranger Things, though we would expect updates on that to be available within the next couple of months. And I will let you know as soon as I find out. And you are listening to EMZT Radio.
Came to me. Hello, horror fans. My name's Douglas McCambridge, and along with my co-host Jamie Lorello, we run a podcast called Good Times, Great Movies, where we review movies from the craziest decade, the 1980s. In October, we do horror movies and horror movies alone, so we're reaching out to you, the listener slash horror fan, to recommend movies you want to hear us talk about. Tweet to us at GTGMcast. Find us on Facebook, listen to the podcast, Good Times, Great Movies. Let us know what horror movies from that decade you want us to talk about. If we choose yours, you win a prize. It'll be something awesome. Blu-rays. That's what I'm going to say. All right. Hope to hear from you.
From an article from the-line-up.com, 5 creepy happenings in history you probably never heard of. Number 5. The incident where a dead girl was exhumed because people thought she was a vampire. Rhode Island, 1883. The family of George and Mary Brown begin to suffer from one of the era's deadliest diseases, tuberculosis, then called consumption. The sickness spreads from one member of the family to another. First to go is Mary, the mother, then her daughter Mary, just 6 months later. She was 20. A few years went by without any issues when 24-year-old Edwin, the Brown's only son, contracted the illness. His father, George, was mad with grief. He couldn't bear to lose another member of his family to tuberculosis, let alone the sole carrier of his name. George took his son to the doctor, then traveled west with him to Colorado Springs for further treatment. Edwin seemed to be getting better when suddenly tragedy struck again. In their absence, 19-year-old Mercy contracted a galloping form of tuberculosis and passed away quickly. It was a terribly cold winter, so rather than being buried in the ground too hard to dig through, she was left in an above-ground crypt to be buried when spring thaw began. Edwin and George returned to Rhode Island. As soon as they came back, Edwin got worse. In fact, he was dying. Turns out dying makes you see crazy shit, because he started telling people that one night he opened his eyes to find his super-dead sister sitting on his chest, attempting to suck what little life remained out of him. You see what he was saying here? He thought his sister was a freaking vampire. Well, as we know, New England in the 1800s wasn't exactly the most level-headed of times. Already a superstitious community, that one-night terror was all it took for townspeople to start spreading rumors. Mercy was walking around the graveyard at midnight. Mercy was wandering through the local crops. Mercy can't eat garlic bread. Then they made the biggest leap of all. Mercy was indeed a vampire and had caused Edwin's illness herself. Since no one really understood how tuberculosis worked, folklore at the time suggested it had nothing to do with science and everything to do with undead activity. Surely Mercy's vampiric status was what caused all the bad luck in the Brown family, and definitely not the fact that we didn't have actual medicine yet. George was either sick of the rumors or persuaded by the townspeople. Either way, he ordered the exhumation of all 3 deceased family members. Both Marys were found in significant states of decomposition. They'd been dead for several years. But Mercy was found hardly decomposed at all. In fact, her skin looked great, and her hair and nails had continued to grow. Vampire for real now! What the poor silly townspeople didn't take into account was that because Mercy was basically kept in a freezer since her death, decomposition had been slowed, like a lot. But that didn't deter them from removing her organs, you know, just to be totally sure. And when they dripped what they interpreted as liquid blood, that was the final nail in the coffin for old Mercy. Acting on what I assume was pure guesswork by now, the townspeople burnt her heart on a rock and proceeded to mix the ashes in water to produce a miracle cure for Edwin, who then, you know, died 2 months later. But at least the vampire was defeated, I guess. Locals still claim that the cemetery where Mercy was eventually given a rightful burial is haunted by her spirit. To me, the spookiest thing about this story isn't the idea of a demonic bloodsucker, but the lengths to which human hysteria will reach for an answer to tragedy. Number 4. This real-life Hannibal who was looking for a voluntary victim and found one. Armin Meiwes is a German computer repair technician known as the Rottenburg Cannibal, or alternately, Der Metzgermeister, the Master Butcher. In the early 2000s, Meiwes took to cannibal fetish website called the Cannibal Cafe in search of a willing participant in their own murder slash human flesh feast. His post read that he was, quote, looking for a well-built 18 to 25-year-old to be slaughtered and then consumed, end quote. Who would sign up for something like that, right? It's crazy. Everything probably turned out fine. Nope. After several people answered the ad and, like normal sane people who did not wish to be eaten, backed out, Miwes finally got a bite. Bern Jürgen Armando Brandis went to Miwes's home on March 9th, 2001. They made a video of Miwes serving Brandis penis, and they went about trying to eat it. First raw, then fried in a pan with salt, pepper, wine, and garlic. Too bad it got burnt and he couldn't eat it after all. So like the swell guy he is, Miwes chopped it into chunks and fed it to his dog. While Brandis bled to death in the tub, Miwes read a Star Trek book for 3 hours, occasionally giving him large amounts of alcohol, 20 sleeping pills, and a full bottle of schnapps before kissing and killing him in a room Miwes called the slaughter room. When Brandis was finally dead, Miwes repurposed his flesh for 10 months. 10 months worth of meals and ground his bones to flour. He was arrested in December of 2002 when new advertisements for victims and gory details about his first successful catch started popping up online. He's in prison for life, but don't worry, he's since become a vegetarian. Number 3. The couple that was abandoned at sea by their diving group and never seen again. Open Water was inspired by Tom and Eileen Lonergan, a married couple from Baton Rouge who went scuba diving in the Coral Sea on January 25, 1998. This was an even worse idea than me watching the movie in the first place because, guess what? They were accidentally stranded by the company they paid to take them scuba diving. It wasn't until almost 2 days later that anyone even noticed they were gone. Could you imagine that in this day and age? Searchers looked for them for 3 days with no results. It's assumed that they died at sea. Or if you watched Open Water, spoiler alert, eaten by sharks, which is literally my nightmare. But afterwards, fishermen found a diver's slate with this message. Monday, January 26, 1998, 08 a.m. To anyone who can help us, we've been abandoned on Agincourt Reef by MV Outer Edge. January 25th, 98, 3 p.m. Please help us. Come to rescue us before we die. Help. Sharks are the worst. They have dead eyes and sharp teeth and probably ate the Lonergans, and thanks to their story, I will never go deep sea scuba diving ever. Ever. You hear me? Number 2. This toxic woman who was straight out of an X-Files episode. February 19, 1994, housewife Gloria Ramirez was taken to the emergency room of Riverside General Hospital. She's in the late stages of cervical cancer and extremely confused. Doctors immediately began to medicate Ramirez. Nothing seemed to help, however, and her heart failed. Staff tried to restart it via a defibrillation machine. It was then that several of the nurses noticed her body was covered in an oily sheen. Some even said that there was a fruity, garlic odor coming from her mouth. When Susan Kane, a registered nurse, tried to draw blood from Ramirez's arm, she noticed an ammonia-like scent coming from the tube the blood was in. She handed this off to Julie Gorshinsky, one of the residents who noticed strange particles floating in the blood. Shortly after that, Kane fainted and was taken out of the room. A few minutes later, Gorshinsky felt nauseous and lightheaded. She left the room and sat down. But after a co-worker asked if she was okay, Gorshinsky fainted too. Meanwhile, in Ramirez's room, another staff member passed out, Maureen Welch, a respiratory therapist. Upon seeing all these people so apparently affected by Ramirez, everyone was told to evacuate the trauma room, and all the ER patients as well, to a parking lot outside the hospital. All that remained was a skeleton crew who worked on Ramirez until 8:50 p.m. 45 minutes of CPR and defibrillation couldn't revive her, and she was pronounced dead. Cause of death, kidney failure. Meanwhile, the staff members who had passed out weren't doing so hot. Gorshinsky was experiencing uncontrollable shaking and apnea. Welsh couldn't control her limbs. Kane complained of a burning face. Sally Balderas, a nurse who went back in the hospital to help isolate Ramirez's body, began retching and also felt burning on her skin. Weird, right? What the hell was wrong with this woman? Well, after the strange case of Gloria Ramirez, the health department sent in two scientists to get to the bottom of things. Here's the bizarre stuff they discovered. Of the 37 emergency room staff members, 23 of them experienced at least one symptom. High-risk victims of the symptoms had worked within 2 feet of Ramirez and handled her IV lines. Women were more likely to experience symptoms than men. Their blood tests post-exposure came back normal. The closest the scientists got to an answer was a theory that Ramirez had been using DMSO as a home remedy for pain, mainly based on the garlic-like taste and the fact that it's greasy, like Ramirez's skin was. They suggested that DMSO built up in her system due to urinary blockage from her failing kidneys. However, many people doubt this theory, and it does seem to be reaching, but no other answers. The authors Hawk and Siegel says, quote, "Beyond this theory, no credible explanation has been offered for the strange case of Gloria Ramirez," end quote. Number 1. The infamous bank robber whose dead body ended up as an amusement park prop. Elmer McCurdy was a bank/train robber who lived pretty typical life for someone born in the late 1800s. You know, thought his biological mother was actually his aunt, drifted around America, boozing it up, trained as a machine gun operator in the army, started robbing trains using nitroglycerin. Man, my life suddenly seems super boring now. In 1911, during a bungled robbery of a Katy train in Oklahoma, McCurdy was killed while trying to steal $400,000 meant for the Osage Nation. Apparently not that bright, he and his men stopped a passenger train instead. Oops. They made off with a grand total of $46, 2 bottles of whiskey, a revolver, a coat, and the train conductor's watch. Because, screw you, conductor, let's see you get to places on time now. But that's not the end of the bandit who wouldn't give up. His body went unclaimed, and a weird undertaker decided to embalm him, shave his face, dress him in a suit, and store it in the back of the funeral home because apparently he wanted ghosts real bad. He refused to release or bury the body and started displaying it in the corner of the funeral home. For a nickel, you could see his dead body. The past was strange. McCurdy became something of a popular attraction, and many carnival promoters tried to purchase his body, but the undertaker said no. In 1916, 2 men claiming to be McCurdy's brothers took custody of the body. They were not, in fact, his brothers, but rather James and Charles Patterson, owner of the Great Patterson Carnival Shows. McCurdy was featured as the outlaw who was never captured alive until 1922, when the traveling carnival was sold to Louis Sonny. Sonny decided to showcase McCurdy's corpse in his Museum of Crime. His body wasn't doing too well by this point. He had shriveled and shrunk to the size of a child, and his skin deteriorated quite a bit. Here's the kicker. Because the Museum of Crime was mostly wax figures, when Sonny died in 1949, McCurdy's corpse was sent to a Los Angeles warehouse with the rest of the pieces. From there, he appeared in the 1967 film She Freak, a wax museum at Mount Rushmore, and eventually ended up as a prop in the Laugh in the Dark Funhouse at the Pike, an amusement park in Long Beach, California. Think about how many people went through that place with no clue that there was a dead bank robber hanging above their heads. Ugh! In 1976, the crew of the popular TV show The $6 Million Man was filming scenes for an episode at the Pike. A prop man moved what he thought was a weird old wax mannequin hanging from a gallows and accidentally broke off an arm. Well, that mannequin was McCurdy, and when his arm broke off, human bone and muscle tissue were visible. I'm assuming that prop man probably shit his pants and never went to funhouses ever again. In 1977, he was finally buried next to another outlaw, Bill Doolin, in Guthrie, Oklahoma. The traveling bandit was at last put to rest. And you're listening to EMZT Radio.
Midnight movies, don't you? But can you handle midnight movies 24 hours a day?
Your death will be indescribable.
Find out on Black Flag TV. The first viral television on the web, Black Flag TV is entirely dedicated to haunting horror, science fiction, and cult movies. Broadcasting live, 24 hours a day, obscure independent movies and classic horror. Make Black Flag TV your sanctuary for the horror genre.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Visit us now, blackflag.tv.
From the-line-up.com, 8 must-read award-winning horror books. For most horror fans, there's nothing like finding out about a great read from a friend you trust. But some of us want even more proof that the books we read are winners. Luckily, that's where the award system comes in. Between the Bram Stoker Awards, the Shirley Jackson Awards, the Locus Awards, and more, professional horror writers who know what scares you judge these well-established prizes for horror books. And they're not letting anything less than spectacular get through. Wilding Hall by Elizabeth Hand. This won the 2015 Shirley Jackson Award for Best Novella. Elizabeth Hand's Wilding Hall tells the story of the acid rock band who made the mistake of recording an album in a haunted mansion. Shortly after completing the album, the band's lead singer wandered off, never to be seen again. Now, years later, the remaining members of the band and their partners have returned, armed with a psychic and a photographer, and are determined to discover what happened to their friend all those years ago. But maybe they should have let sleeping secrets lie, because what happens at Wilding Hall stays at Wilding Hall. It can be found at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. The Resurrection Man's Legacy by Dale Bailey. 2002 International Horror Guild Award for Intermediate Form for Death and Suffrage. If you thought this election season was the stuff of nightmares, you obviously haven't read the works of Dale Bailey. In his first collection of dark fantastical stories, The Dead Come Back to Vote in the Presidential Election, a census taker stumbles upon a town in the bayou in a particularly horrifying time in American history, and a father anxiously ruminates over the fate of his unborn child. Given the sheer terror exhibited in these stories, it's no surprise The Resurrection Man's Legacy was nominated for a Locus Award for Best Collection and his short Death and Suffrage, which is featured in the collection, won the 2002 International Horror Guild Award for Intermediate Form. If what you read here terrifies you, you're in luck. Bailey is also the author of four novels and numerous short stories, including The End of Everything, which won the Shirley Jackson Award for Best Novelette in 2014. It can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. Our Lady of Darkness by Fritz Lieber, 1977 World Fantasy Award. From the Grand Master of Horror, Fantasy, and Science Fiction, Fritz Lieber's Our Lady of Darkness was based largely on his own autobiography. Like Lieber, the protagonist of Our Lady of Darkness, Franz Weston, is also recovering from the death of his wife, sliding into alcoholism and depression. Also like Lieber, Weston is an amateur astronomer. While gazing out his window at the stars, he's astonished to see a figure waving at him from a hilltop miles away. When he hikes out to the top of the hill and looks back at his apartment, the same person, or thing, waves back at him. Chills. This dark, twisted fantasy book won the World Fantasy Award for Best Novel in 1977, and Lieber was honored with many awards during his lifetime, including the Lifetime Achievement Lovecraft Award and the Grandmaster Nebula Award. Can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple iBooks. Boy's Life, Robert R. McCammon, 1991 World Fantasy Award for Novel, and the Bram Stoker Award for Superior Achievement in a Novel. Call it a sixth sense or what you will, but as only children can, Corey J. Mackinson has picked up some strange things in his hometown of Zephyr. But the day he and his father watch a car drive off the road into the lake holds the one sight Corey can't forget. When his father jumps in to save the driver, he instead finds a murder victim, a naked corpse handcuffed to the steering wheel. Robert McCammon is the best-selling author of 19 novels, and his work has been compared to the likes of Stephen King and Ray Bradbury. If that's not enough of a selling point, Boy's Life won both the World Fantasy Award and the Bram Stoker Award when it was published in 1991. And this can also be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. Song of Kali by Dan Simmons, 1986 World Fantasy Award for Novel. Journalist Robert Luzak travels to Calcutta to locate poetry of the allegedly deceased M. Das. There he finds a terrifying cult devoted to Kali, the goddess of death. The chilling and horrifying novel is considered by many to be Simmons' finest work. In addition to winning the World Fantasy Award for Song of Kali, Dan Simmons has also won the Bram Stoker Award, the International Horror Guild Award, and the Hugo Award. This can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple iBooks. Zombie by Joyce Carol Oates. 1995 Bram Stoker Award for Superior Achievement in a Novel. Though most know Joyce Carol Oates as the prolific best-selling author of sagas like We Were the Mulvaneys and The Falls in the late 1980s, Oates ventured into genre territory, influenced and inspired by Gothic literature. Her 1995 novel, Zombie, explores the mind of a terrifying serial killer based on the life of Jeffrey Dahmer. Quentin P. hopes to create an army of sex slave zombies by altering his young male victim's brain. As his brutal mission for control escalates, Oates explores the devastating and horrific mind of one of the most notorious serial killers of all time. The book won the Bram Stoker Award for Superior Achievement in a Novel, 1995. This can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. A Head Full of Ghosts by Paul Tremblay. 2015 Bram Stoker Award for Superior Achievement in a Novel. Horror writer Paul Tremblay's A Head Full of Ghosts blends Rosemary's Baby with House of Leaves and Big Brother, an astonishing and terrifying mix that won him the Bram Stoker Award for Superior Achievement in a Novel in 2015. When a family's two young daughters begin exhibiting strange behavior outside the normal teenage rebellion, their father determines the eldest daughter has been possessed by a demon and calls in a priest for an exorcism. The two men then make the strange decision to film the entire ordeal as part of a reality television show, only further complicating the family's situation and the truth of their daughter's illness. This can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple iBooks. The Drowning Girl by Caitlin R. Kiernan, 2012 Bram Stoker Award for Superior Achievement in a Novel. Written as a fictional memoir of the unreliable narrator India, The Drowning Girl follows a schizophrenic woman as she spirals out of control after meeting a hitchhiker who she becomes obsessed with. The novel combines horror with elements of magical realism as our narrator slips deeper and deeper into her own delusions, unable to separate fact from fiction. In addition to winning the Bram Stoker Award, the novel also won the James Tiptree Jr. Award and was nominated for the Nebula Award, Locus Award, Shirley Jackson Award, and more. This can be found also on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple iBooks. And I will leave a link in the show notes to where you can find out more about these books. And you are listening to EMZT Radio.
Thank you. in red tights, planning for the day I die. I plan to have my heart put in a jar of formaldehyde. Stacking for a vampire in my everyday attire. Into shocking visuals and partying at funerals. Celebrating Halloween every day of every week. Sipping on a sweet cyanide spike drink while meditating to the sound of squeaky swings and screeching out. If there's dread, doom and gloom, I am always in a better mood. It's useless to explain the twisted function of my brain. I'm wide-eyed, mesmerized, and hypnotized by anything. Dark, scary, creepy, macabre, strange, unusual.
And that wraps up another episode of EMZT Radio. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it and maybe learned a little something, too. Be sure to check us out all over the web. EMZT Radio on Twitter. EMZT Podcast Radio on Facebook. Our website, emztproductions.us. We are also on the freaky side of the Vampire Freaks, EMZT Radio Podcast 666. We also have a Patreon page, EMZT Radio. We have our two YouTube channels, EMZT Radio and EMZT Productions. And please do check out all our crowd fundraising friends. Alex Fernandez is needing some help reaching his goal. Please help out with that. You know what great stuff he does with Dawn and Body Jumpers. This new one, Aurora, is going to be amazing as well. And if you can, please give to our Patreon page so we can start earning a little money. We need help with website fees, music license fees. So it's basically for the podcast. We are not able to draw a salary, and none of it is going to us. It's all going to the podcast. So even a dollar helps. And hopefully MJ and I can meet up again sometime when we both have the time. And stay tuned for another episode of EMZT Radio. Eggos, MJ, you know you gotta have the Eggos.
Psychos! Movies make psychos more creative!
Red Rum!